you're going to hear Bill Murray singing Everything Is Going
when
Up.
When I was just a little kidlet once upon a time, my mother used to send me to the store with just a dime. And I'd bring home a stir and steak quite big enough for three. And mother dear, the good old soul, would give the change to me. Then 80 cents for my hat all trimmed with silk and plush. Today I paid $1 for a plate of oatmeal mush. Everything is going up, going up.
And inflation. On the price of gasoline, you know that little slide whistle in there?
Yeah.
You pay as much for calico.
We're hearing this whole thing. I'm not cutting out. We're hearing this whole thing. Under 3 minutes.
Oh, no, no, no. We can't do that. Come on.
We're at the chorus. We can't get... Okay, fine. I reluctantly stop it. But, guys, look it up. His name is Bill Murray. It's really easy to Google. There's no one else famous named Bill Murray. You should look for Billy Murray, because he went by Billy Murray. Everything is going up from 1917. Welcome to the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and joining me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy. I want to go right into our sponsor.
Okay.
Our sponsor this week is Colgate. Because in 1917, they started to sell Colgate to India. They went into the Indian market. Until then, Indians were using charcoal to clean their teeth.
And that can't work, right?
No, it actually worked. William Colgate, or Benjamin Colgate, whatever his name, what he found was if you want to make a dentifrice paste, you need to mix in some sort of grittiness, because that's what's scraping off the yellow on your teeth. And charcoal works just fine. It doesn't feel right. Because it's black instead of white.
Yeah, so you have black teeth in afterwards.
Yeah, but I think you can make white charcoal. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're using white charcoal, then it's fine. Black charcoal, it would be like you know, your teeth look disgusting until you rinse them out. Then you see.
I think you're stumbling on a way to revitalize the coal mining community.
Oh, yes, by selling charcoal.
Yeah.
But as I found out, one of the new innovations in toothpaste technology is putting charcoal back in. So you can buy toothpaste around the world that has like a black stripe in it instead of a colored gel stripe, and that's the charcoal. So
we're going back to, we want the same dental care that people got in 1917.
In India, yes. And this became a big deal when they started to sell it again in India, because Indians were saying, hey, we were doing this 100 years ago, and you told us we were wrong. And now 100 years later, you're catching up and realizing that it works?
They were very proud
of themselves.
What's wrong with our current toothpaste technology that we went back to charcoal?
There's nothing wrong with it.
I imagine teeth are much better now than they were back then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're enormously better. But you got to sell toothpaste. Mm-hmm. If I saw something with a black stripe in it, I would definitely stop to see what that was. You know, you've seen blue stripes and red stripes.
So it's like toothpaste
stripes.
For goths, pretty much.
Yeah, goth toothpaste. Imagine if you're brushing your teeth and it's like gray. That'd be kind of cool. Right off the bat, it'd be cool. The second time around, I think you'd be a little tired of it. And the third time around, you'd be like, I shouldn't have made this purchase. I bought green ketchup one time, and that was my thought process.
I remember that being a thing for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, first time, it's like, wow, this is great. Look, it's a green cheeseburger. It's disgusting. And second time, it's like, well, I just need something to dip in my fries. And then the third time, it's like, oh, it's not done yet. Maybe if I just have a whole lot of ketchup with this meal, then no, it's still not done.
Yeah, I remember it came out right around the same time as like when we were doing like clear colas and something like that. Yeah,
yeah, it was the late 90s, early aughts.
Mm-hmm.
So the ad, the Colgate ad from 1917. Colgate is prescribed by more dentists than any other dentifrice. A dentifrice has but one main purpose, to clean the teeth. Dentists know this. They are not misled by extravagant claims or by exaggerated statements in favor of over-medicated preparations. They prefer Colgate's Ribbon Dental Cream, both for what it does, and does well, and for what it does not do, and makes no claims to do. You too should prefer it for the same reasons. For its safe cleansing action, for its mild antiseptic properties, which go as far as its safe or advisable, and for its delicious flavor, which makes the twice-a-day care of the teeth a pleasure. Particularly in the care of children, the flavor of Colgate is invaluable for forming the habit of regular tooth brushing. Good teeth, good health. So, that was the ad that Indians saw 100 years ago today, telling them not to use charcoal. Now, the West has changed their mind and is telling India, charcoal, you were right.
Have you seen charcoal toothpaste being sold in stores?
I saw a picture of it online, but I've not seen it in stores.
Yeah, you know, I buy toothpaste. I do.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've not seen it there.
I buy toothpaste too, but I didn't want to say that because I grew up, like when I was in my early 20s, I was looking for jobs. There would sometimes be a job at like Gourmet magazine. And I would try to make a joke that I was an expert on food, having eaten it three times a day my entire life. And I think they took one read at that, like, nope, don't need to read any further. You're making light of the fact that you are a human being who eats food. No. The only person who would do that cares nothing about what they're putting
in their humor. The editor is there.
That's why they gave a...
How do you and I both decide that, like, we were going to get journalism degrees right when journalism was ending?
Yeah.
What a horrible idea. Why didn't anybody tell us out of that?
It wasn't ending. It was just changing. The online world was coming in. Hmm. So you can still do journalism, you just can't get paid.
Yeah, you can't get paid. It's not like a real job.
Right. There's still a huge, burgeoning need.
Any jerk to write it.
Right. Right. And I was surprised that the patch system is as big as it is. Mm-hmm. If you guys haven't heard of Patch, they're a website where, like, they just decided, okay, every country or every town in America now has its own Patch site. And someone is going to get about $14,000 a year to work 80 hours a week writing content for this website we just made up on the spot. And if you want to advertise for it, great. But I don't know anyone who reads Patch for my particular town.
I don't know if my town has one.
I'm sure your town has one. It's just that it doesn't have
I've heard of
particular
it.
Market share.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but the way journalism is supposed to work, it trickles up. And the little local weekly papers, if there's something interesting going on, a big daily will find out about it. And if the big daily finds out about it, then eventually the national newspapers will find out about it. And that's how the news trickles up. And I was moving my hands up to...
Yep, I saw it. I wasn't getting it otherwise.
Yep. It was very confusing. One of the stories I wanted to talk about this week was called The Silent Parade by a phenomenal guy I'd never heard of before named James Weldon Johnson. As of 4 o'clock this afternoon, I didn't know who James Weldon Johnson is. Right now, I want to dedicate the rest of my life to writing book after book after book about him.
Is it that guy who used to eat everything?
Diamond Jim Brady?
Yeah, Diamond Jim Brady.
No. He's far better than Diamond Jim Brady.
Yeah.
No, but he was a poet. He was a songwriter. He was one of the first person to run the NAACP. He was one of the Harlem Renaissance guys. He was a teacher. He was an activist. He got 10,000 people 100 years ago today, this week, to protest in the streets of New York City to protest lynching, which it seems like that's a... If there's anything you should be protesting, it's lynching.
The fact that we actually had to get a protest together for it.
I'm imagining, like you know how protests have counter-protests? What is the possible counter-protest? come on.
Not that bad. Yeah. I'm picturing the rope lobby trying to get it shut down.
But
there's actually, I don't know if you saw this, it was in the news this past week, there's a school in, I think, Oregon called Lynch High School, Lynch Middle School, something like that. And it was named after somebody named Lynch, who was one of the founders of the town.
Okay.
And they're because of pressure, they are changing the names of the schools.
Okay.
That has Lynch and me in the title.
I would be fine with that.
But it's named after a person.
Yeah, but the you can change that. Where Seattle is, it's called King County. They changed the name of their county. But Listen to this. It was named after someone who was an almost vice president 100 years ago, because it was before they were a state and they were trying to make it a state. So this is a way of kissing up to the future maybe vice president. And that's just a bad reason to name a whole county after someone. They changed it and said the new king he's named after is Martin Luther King.
Okay.
So all of a sudden they don't need to change any of the brochures or the cutlery. I'm sure they have cutlery that says King County on it.
So this person named Lynch. So you're saying that you have that people have to go with the idea that this school was founded because people love lynching so much. the act of lynching was so popular in this town
that it was named,
that they decided to name a school.
No, it's
not after a person, but after the violent act of lynching, because it was just it was so important. That's basically what you're saying.
No, I'm saying it's like the Bob Hitler thing. I'm sure there was a guy in 1933 named Bob Hitler who was just living his life in Nebraska somewhere, and then it's like, hey, Bob Hitler, guess what? There's a guy named Adolf Hitler who just became Chancellor of Germany. Maybe he's your relative. He's like, oh, no, I'm sure he's not a relative. And then as the years went on, it's like, this is awful. Whenever anyone thinks Hitler, they don't think of me, Bob Hitler. They think of Adolf Hitler. This is a terrible last name. It used to be great until stupid Adolf Hitler.
So anybody with the last name Lynch should not have their name. They should change their name.
They could change their name. What else are you naming?
When you meet someone with the last name Lynch, do you automatically your mind goes to lynching?
I don't think of that. No. No, I think of people like David Lynch.
If you saw a school called Lynch Middle School, you would assume that this playground was once the lynch ground. It was where all the lynchings took place.
I wouldn't think that, but I have no problem with people being sensitive to the idea that this name has a lot of bad connotations.
I'm aware of that. I know that, but come on, it just seems like an unnecessary kind of.
Well, to me, I don't care that much about names. If you wanted to change your name and call yourself Carlos,
if they named it after me, I'd be pissed off. Well, I have a bad name now. They got to take it away from me.
Well, that's what they're doing in our school. Did you hear about what's happening with Lozier Hall?
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Okay, so Vinny and I went to the same school, and there was someone named Paul Lozier who donated a bunch of money. And
it's been spelled loser with umlauts.
It's spelled loser.
It has umlauts.
It has umlauts?
Yeah.
I didn't know it had umlauts. No, yeah. I just saw L-O-S-E-R. Mm-mm. So anyone who goes to the college because they just get tired of saying Lozier Hall eventually gives up and says Lozier Hall, and then they forget it was even an issue. And then they show it to someone, and they're like, wait, well, you have a building called Lozier Hall? And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. You're not on the inside. You're not in the beltway in the loop where it's just normal that you have something called Lozier Hall. But he donated a bunch of money, and the building got named after him. It turned out that Paul Lozier worked for a segregated school system 50s. And
well, he worked for it, or did he, like, set it up?
He was the superintendent.
Okay.
I mean, he didn't set it up because it had been segregated.
I think a lot of people worked for segregated school systems in the 50s.
Yeah, but he was one of the people who, when they were switching over, I believe, was defending the segregated system by saying, it works for everyone.
Does his family get the money back?
I don't think they get the money back.
Really? See, I'm okay with changing it, but I do feel like
they should get the money back?
Yeah.
But the particulars in this case were that they donated money, but they didn't want it named after them. But then all of the board of directors took it and, like, gave themselves raises with the money or something like that. And they got caught with their hands in the cookie jar.
So the money's gone.
Well,
anyway,
the money was, like, requisitioned to something else that wasn't what he donated for. So the family said, okay, now you have to put our name on. And by the way, our name is, like, Bumface. No, the name was Lozier.
Well, that's different than somebody whose name happens to be Lynch. I just think that you're... Look, I'm not alt-righter here, Jeff.
No, and I know you are not in any way defending Lynch.
But I do think you're being a cuck.
Well, I am half snowflake on my mother's side. Our big story this week is J. Edgar Hoover. 100 years ago today, J. Edgar Hoover started to work for the government in the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have a massive career in the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's some stats for you.
It portrayed many times in movies, too.
Yeah, yeah. If you are an overweight, balding, middle-aged man, do we have a role for you? If someone says, hey, Bob Hoskins, he's like, no, I'm not Bob Hoskins. I'm just someone else. You are going to play the hell out of J. Edgar Hoover. And since he was around for so long, like, anywhere from, like, I don't know, like 27 to 72, you can play J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
Any age range. So long as you're like mid-size, about 200 pounds, and balding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the three criteria. You don't even need to be English. Just do a gruff accent. So, he got his LLM from George Washington Law in May of 1917. And by the summer, he started to work in the State Department. In 1921, he moves over to the Bureau of Intelligence. In 1924, he becomes the director of the Bureau of Intelligence thanks to the Teapot Dome scandal, which knocked out the existing director. In 1935, the Bureau of Intelligence changed its name to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He is in command of the FBI as the first head of the FBI for six presidencies, starting with FDR going all the way down to Nixon. He ran it for 37 years straight, which is obscene when you think about it.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah, think about having the same job for 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
And having
not
the job...
Not just working in the same company, but...
Like the same job.
Oh, God, I'm teaching it. That's very possible.
Yeah. Well, imagine
shit.
Like, if you were, like, a principal, and you became a principal, like, right now.
Yeah.
And you just do nothing but be the same principal at the same school for the next 37 years. That's what his career was like. And everyone in Washington was petrified of him.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how he got his start, because of what he did in 1917. To rewind the clock just a little bit, in 1916, he got like a summer job working for the Library of Congress. And if you think about J. Edgar Hoover, you think about blackmail, almost always blackmail. He finds out something about a senator, he holds it over the senator, I have these incriminating pictures of you, and if you don't do what I say...
It goes in like a folder.
Yeah, and that all came from the Library of Congress. He's basically an evil librarian. Mm-hmm. He finds information, and then he promises to not give it to you unless you do what
he
says.
Remember when he was working as a librarian, his glasses fell off, and we saw how beautiful he really was.
And then he took off his ponytail, and he finally got the girl.
Yeah, shook his hair out.
Well, he did not get the girl.
Or desire to get the girl.
No. One of the many things about the legend of J. Edgar Hoover was that he was in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, because of like the skeletons in his world, he assumed everyone else was equally walking around with terrible secrets. And the fact that he was gay was not a terrible secret. Back then it was, to him it was, but if he was around now, what do you think it would be like if J. Edgar Hoover was out?
Well, I think also, wasn't he like he wasn't just a gay man. He was also like cross-dressed too.
Right.
He's almost like he's what people thought gay people did.
Right.
But he was really doing it.
Right. But I think a lot of that was because he was so repressed. It was like every once in a while, I need to do everything I'm told not to do, even if I don't really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like he would have cross-dressed and also tried heroin at the same time, just because it was all on the list of things he's not mm-hmm. supposed to do. While cutting off tags of pillows.
Are there any pictures of him in the dress?
I don't think there are. But I don't
know. I kind of want to see what that looks like.
You can watch Nixon, the...
No, I want to see the real white J. Edgar Hoover.
Not Bob Hopkins.
Yeah, I want to see if he pulls it off at all. Like how... You know what I mean? Like, how into it did he get? Did he just, like, throw a dress on? Or did he, like, you know, get a little makeup, like, the hair?
Was he trying to pass as a woman?
Yeah, or was it just like, I'm going to dress, it's comfortable.
I think it would just be like a man in a dress.
You know, I need a 48 stout evening gown.
Yeah, because he's not like a willowy feminine looking person. He's like a tough like fire plug of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who Melvin Purvis is?
No.
Melvin Purvis was one of his like famous G men, one of the guys who was working to get John Dillinger and the rest of those like public enemies from the 1930s and the Great Depression. Melvin Purvis was a handsome guy, and J. Edgar Hoover had like a bit of a crush on him. But Melvin Purvis was an idiot. I read the book Public Enemies that they made the Johnny Depp movie about. And this actually happened, that someone broke away from Dillinger's gang to call Purvis and say, I know where Dillinger is going. He's going to be at like the Amalgamated Bank next Tuesday at 9 a.m. You got to send someone there. I got to go. And then he hangs up the phone and goes back to the gang. And he risked his life to give this information. Melvin Purvis writes it down on a piece of paper and then forgets. He totally forgets. And the bank gets robbed. And he shows up like 4 hours later. He's like, oh, yeah.
Oh no. Melvin's, you're so stupid.
So he tells J. Edgar Hoover, like, yeah, I got this tip a couple of days ago about the bank robbery, and I forgot. And J. Edgar Hoover's like, that's okay. Yeah. I'm sure it happens to the best of us. But then he, like, fires everyone else involved in the case.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of the mythos of J. Edgar Hoover, that he was not remotely fair. If he liked you, he did everything in your favor. If he didn't like you, there was no way you were advancing, and he would try to ruin you by blackmailing other people. I'm just now realizing I've seen about a dozen movies where there was like a mastermind who's in a wheelchair or locked in a cage or like behind bars. But his thing is like he'll blackmail one guy who's supposed to blackmail like four other guys who's supposed to blackmail 19 other guys. So it's like he has this army and he's, you know, in control just by writing on a piece of paper he can do anything. That's basically J. Edgar Hoover.
I don't know any movie that has that in it.
Really?
No.
Maybe I'm thinking of comic books a lot.
It makes sense,
yeah.
your comparison.
Yeah,
but
I think that,
as you were saying it, I'm going like, yeah, see, I'm like, no, I've never seen a movie with that.
I've seen that in Oz or in Prison Break, I think, where there was a guy behind bars and all he had to do was like write one word on a piece of paper and give it to a friend. The friend would give it to someone else who would like make a phone call and then would trickle down and then your family would be dead. So his job in 1917, when he first started, was to arrest and jail people who were un-American, which doesn't sound like a very American job. But he was part of the anti-red movement. But this was before the anti-red movement, so this was anti-German. So he basically had a list of people with German last names, and he was investigating to see how many of them were dirty craps and how many of them were loyal 100% Americans.
You're getting racist again this week, huh? Your racist Jeff Cameron. You've been breaking out.
He had a list of 1,400 people. Of them, 98...
The fact that you didn't respond to that, I know you want to edit that out. That I said that. I know. I know you didn't respond because you're looking to edit that out.
And now I can't.
No, I know. It's an insurance in there.
So, there were 1,400 names on the list. Of them, 98 got arrested. Another 1,172 were deemed arrestable, which meant like, yeah, we'll just get around to arresting them one day. I'm sure they're guilty. They're guilty of something. They got German last names. I mean, you know, they're definitely working for the Krauts.
Well, in all fairness, Germany did come around 20 years later.
Yeah, but that's 20 years later. This is World War I we're talking about. So
I mean, just like he may have been onto something there.
Yeah. And 130 people, if I did the math, subtracting 1,172 and then 98 from 1,400, only 130 were innocent. So I think he kept that math in his head. I think he walked around the world thinking 90% of everyone is guilty. Guilty to the point where I should arrest them and throw them in jail forever.
Mm-hmm.
Which explains a lot of his actions. He's walking around in what he thinks of as Sodom and Gomorrah, where everyone at all times is the worst person they can be. Because that's like that's how he sees the world. And maybe that explains everything about him. Not just the closet part, but the part where he would be so terrible to everyone because he thought everyone deserved it. You know, the whole sinners in the hands of an angry God.
Yeah.
You think everyone is always the worst. So whatever you do, they deserved it. I'm curious. I'm going to look up J. Edgar Hoover on IMDb. I want to see who's played him. Leonardo DiCaprio played him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard that they had a problem because he looks nothing like J. Edgar Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover kind of looks like Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
He was a young man. He's like very distinct eyes. He has the same eyes that the Mr. Robot guy did. But DiCaprio doesn't have those eyes. They look nothing like him. But they needed to make him make Leo an old man. So they decided they were going to like kind of morph him with makeup so that when he became an old man, it wasn't Leo DiCaprio as an old man, but J. Edgar Hoover as an old man, which is, it was weird. And they gave him like a very realistic 70-year-old man belly. And I remember seeing the one shot where he like he's falling down dead and he's got an old man belly. I was like, did they actually find an old man and just tell him to lie down and pretend to be dead and they put fake Leonardo DiCaprio's old fat head on him? Or,
well, it's all makeup. You can put anybody in the makeup then.
Yeah, but or did they, are they so good with makeup effects that they could put an old fake belly on young
guy? Yeah, we're getting Leo's face to somebody, or right. Are we getting an old man's belly on Leo?
Right. Now, because it was Clint Eastwood as a director, he doesn't care about frou-frou. He would have done whatever is simpler. So I don't think he would have put Leo's face on an old man body. I think he would have just said, you know, let's just put some, just keep adding fat to his midsection until he looks appropriately old manish.
It's a brilliant analysis there, Jeff. Like Leonard Maltin.
I hadn't quite thought it through when I started to talk. But I figured if I keep on talking, maybe something will come out. I'm on J. Edgar Hoover's page himself. I thought it was going to be like the character, but he's in a couple of movies, mostly like documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. This is what I'm looking for. Okay. A whole bunch of people have played J. Edgar Hoover. 61 people have played J. Edgar Hoover
over
the years. Russell Hardy. I don't know who he is.
Me neither.
Harris Yulin played him in the FBI story. I know Harris Yulin.
Yeah.
He's a character actor. You definitely recognize him. He plays a judge in Ghostbusters 2. He's the one who starts yelling at everyone, then the Scolari brothers come out.
Okay.
A bunch of people I don't know. Vincent Gardenia played him in an episode of Kennedy. Ernest Borgnine played him in a movie called Blood Feud. Ned Beatty played him in Robert Kennedy at His Times. Jack Warden played him in Hoover versus the Kennedys, the Second Civil War. Treat Williams played him in J. Edgar Hoover. Kevin Dunn played him in Chaplin. Kevin Dunn, more of a comedian, but good for him. Bob Hoskins played him in Nixon. Richard Dysart played him in Panther, and also played him in Marilyn Bobby, Her Final Affair. Larry Drake played him in Time Quest. Ernest Borgnine played him again in Hoover. Billy Crudup played him in Public Enemies. Leonardo DiCaprio played him in J. Edgar. Rob Riggle played him in Drunk History. Will Ferrell played him in The Spoils Before Dying. Fabian Starr played him in Deadly Shootouts. Stephen Root played him in All the Way. William Forsythe played him in Man in the High Castle. And I've left out like half.
Do you have a favorite? Hoover actor.
My favorite Hoover actor is, I'm going to say Stephen Root. Big fan of Stephen Root.
Me too. Stephen's the best in everything.
I haven't even seen Stephen Root and J. Edgar Hoover.
But you know
he's
good.
My favorite.
Yeah.
He is a true character actor. You never know who he's going to play. He could play anyone.
Mm-hmm.
He can play everything. Good for him.
Think we can get him as a guest on here?
That would be weird. I don't want guests.
You don't want to have Stephen Root come to your kitchen?
He's not going to come to my kitchen.
Well, I picture we wouldn't tell him, like, you know, this is the show and it's in a kitchen. You know, pick him up at the airport, trick him.
And then for like a doubly tangential reason, we're doing a show exclusively about 1917, and you have not made any movies in 1917, but you played a character who was alive in 1917.
Well, maybe he would come in character to the kitchen as J. Edgar Hoover and call you a sodomite.
So, we want you to dress up in character from one of the 9,000 movies you've done. Fly on your own expense out here. We're not getting you a hotel room either.
No, I think we would do it. We would do a... you know, like a GoFundMe to get him here.
We would say it's for charity.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1917 was the year of G-Men, was the year of Soviets, was the year of Bolsheviks. We just talked about G-Men earlier on this year with the Russian Revolution. We talked about Soviets and Bolsheviks. But I'm not talking about that sort of world. I am talking about the Oxford English Dictionary. Our quiz this week is going to be about words that were added to the Oxford English Dictionary in 1917.
And they all start with G?
They don't all start with G.
Oh, okay.
No. No. G-Men was added, Soviet was added,
okay.
Bolshevik was added. Those are all 1917.
I thought you were going like a Jeopardy category.
Oh, G-Men. Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, yeah. No, that's not it. And I have way more than 10 words, and they're such good words, so that we're just going to have a conversation about words, and we'll seg into the quiz. Aussie was also a word that was first used in 1917. But the way the Oxford English Dictionary works, they get as many different like periodicals and letters of the time, and then the first time something is mentioned, then it shows up, and that's how it counts.
Mm-hmm.
So Soviet and Bolshevik you would understand,
yeah.
Because 1916 those things weren't around. G-Men also you understand. Aussie, I think people were saying it, but no one was writing it down. So they finally found someone who wrote it down in 1917. It doesn't mean that that was the first year people started to say it. And as an example of that, another word that entered the Oxford English Dictionary in 1917 was OMG. One person in a diary wrote OMG instead of Oh My God. And it didn't catch on for like another 90 years.
Wow.
But it wasn't...
It's that old, huh?
Yeah, but it wasn't like that person was so influential. It's just like people make acronyms of things. 100 years ago, people made acronyms of things. And one guy, one time. So I don't think OMG gets to count just because someone wrote it down. But that's I don't have any other better way of saying when OMG should start counting.
I can't picture people saying, oh my God.
No.
Back then either. It doesn't seem like a 1917-ish thing to say.
No. You would
be like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, we're our tarnation.
Yeah.
And then people would slap you because tarnation was the worst thing in the world to say. Do you know autofocus was first said in 1917?
Mm-hmm.
That was a...
It's also how we describe our parties. Our autofocus parties.
Mustard gas began in 1917. Package as a verb, like to package up some meat to go. Mm-hmm. Pep pills for, I guess, speed, basically. That's what pep pills were,
yeah.
Right? And he's
I would associate them with like baseball and truckers.
Yeah, yeah, and Chevy Chase, and the word pinko because you've brought in Soviet and Bolshevik. You need pinko to complete the trilogy.
Why pinko?
Because a pinko is someone like verging towards red.
Oh, okay. So it's like a little mix there.
Yeah, but I guess it only works for like white Europeans because Because if you're mixing, like, if you know, that's white mixed with red
mm-hmm.
to get pink. If you're mixing other colors or other skin tones, you're not going to get red. I don't quite know what the other colors you're going to get are. Because I'm not good with the color wheel. And I Google this on a regular basis, just what, like, the different colors of red and green and blue are. Because I'm just curious, like, oh, that's aquamarine. And that's teal next to it, and they're different. Oh, and that's cyan, they're all totally different. I always thought that those were the same, but they're so remarkably different. Okay, on to the quiz. This word is French for disguise. This was the hardest one. I'm starting off with the hardest one.
Masquerade.
Good, 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 good. You're wrong, but it was a good guess. Oh, camouflage.
Okay, it's me. Yeah. I like my guess.
That was a solid guess. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of military stuff because you know we were in a war. A shortened way of talking about bullets, an abbreviated way of describing bullets. Not ammunition, but
Caliber?
Ammo.
Ammo. Okay. Ammo. Now I get the game. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. This was a narrow raised platform, often on a vessel.
Narrow
raised. Or over a factory floor. A catwalk.
Okay. I'm not good at this game. It was embarrassing me.
No. No. There's.
I blame your questions.
Yeah, I'm not giving very particularly good questions, but I've got a lot of them, so I'll read them fast. You have like 2 seconds.
Not only is this boring in your bed at it, it's going to be long.
No, but it's going to be short because we're just banging them out.
Okay.
Okay. This word was British from Malaysian for disease.
British from Malaysian? What does that mean?
The Brits were in Malaysia, and this was a Malaysian word that meant disease, which the Brits then adulterated and started to use to talk about diseases.
Grip.
Cootie.
Okay.
Cootie came from Malaysian. This was a German dog breeder, and the type of dog that he breeded started to be called after him, starting in 1917.
Schnauzer.
Doberman.
Okay.
Schnauzer is a very good guess.
Yes.
Yeah. If I had this question, I would be very proud to guess Schnauzer, and I would be in disbelief.
Stop trying to make me feel good, Jeff.
Okay, I'll just move on. This is a French word that means right away that the Brits started to use because they were in France.
Hmm.
Toot sweet.
I don't know that.
You don't know toot sweet?
No.
Come on, toot sweet.
I don't know it.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Sorry.
I took French instead of Spanish, so I knew that one very well. I was happy to find out where it came from. This is the word that means drunk, and it kind of sounds like a Gumby character.
The only Gumby characters are Gumby,
mm-hmm.
Pokey, and those the blockheads. are there any other Pokey Gumby characters?
I was looking for the word Blotto.
There's a Gumby character named Blotto?
No, he sounds like a Gumby character. He sounds like he could be a Gumby character.
I'm going with trying to think of Gumby characters, and as far as I know, there's two.
Yeah, there's two. Mr. Bill counts as an honorary Gumby character.
Was he in Gumby, or is he just like a...
No, he was an SNL character.
In the fashion of Gumby.
Yeah, because he was claymation and really cheap. This one is a retronym. A retronym is a word like day game in baseball that used to describe everything, and now it describes just a subsection of it.
Mm-hmm.
So this was to volunteer for an army. Instead of being conscripted, a volunteer was called an enlistee.
All right.
Okay. This is a word to dance. I think of it as a World War II word, or like a Jazz Age word. I guess it started in 1917. Also means snot.
Boogie?
Boogie. There you go. You got one.
All right. Nice.
Okay. I'll talk about it for another 2 minutes to make you feel better. This is like a Joe Biden-y word to talk about something that's fake or malarkey. It's not malarkey.
Oh.
No, it's along the lines of fake or malarkey.
Fugazi.
Hokum.
Huh.
Hokum apparently is a mixture of hocus pocus and bunkum, I think.
Can you picture Joe Biden saying fugazi?
No.
No?
No.
Too ethnic?
Yeah, too ethnic. I can definitely imagine him saying hokum, though. He probably has said hokum. I bet if I Googled it, I could find him saying the word hokum. To make fun of someone would be to do this verb. It comes from the British raspberry.
To razz
someone. Yep. This is the action that you would use for a seltzer bottle.
Spritz,
yep. And our last word from 1917, it means to increase in volume, and it's also the title of a documentary about McDonald's.
Supersize me.
Supersize, yes. I truly would have never guessed that supersize was first used in 1917.
No, me either.
No. But I guess they mean like super carriers and super bombs. Most words sound old-fashioned when you add super next to them, mm-hmm. but some of them sound modern. So this was one of the old words. Is that it?
Yeah, well, you're forgetting something.
Oh, I am. I've forgotten. We've saved the best for last.
We teased it last episode.
Yes. So you are now going to read James Stewart's terrible poem about his dog, Bo, because I had a dog, Bo.
Yes. And this, the poem is called My Dog, Bo. Now, it's very long. Yeah. I'm not going to read it all.
Okay.
All right.
Just give us a flavor.
If you were reading it, you would definitely make the choice to read the whole thing. You know, like that.
What, to pad out the episode?
Well, how many minutes we had here?
We're only at 41.
All right. They're not all long. What do you want?
I don't want to read the whole poem.
All right. I won't read the whole thing.
Okay.
He never came to me when I would call.
Wait, that's your Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah.
I got a better Jimmy Stewart than that.
That's yours.
Okay. He never came when I had a call. I don't know the words, but I got the
story. Oh, okay, here we are.
Okay, we'll go back to forth.
All right.
Jimmy to Jimmy.
I'll stand up right. So
yes. Okay.
He never came to me when I would call.
Unless I had a tennis ball.
Or he felt like it.
But mostly, he didn't come at all.
When he was young,
he never learned to heal
or sit and stay.
He did things his way.
Discipline was not as bad.
But when you were with him, things sure didn't drag.
He'd dig up a rose bush just to spite me.
And when I grab him, he'd turn and bite me.
Oh, that's really shitty, isn't it? I feel like we're making each other worse.
Well, the thing with Jimmy Stewart, too, is like you can only be an old man and get away with this.
Yeah.
You know, like they would have lynched him. They would have had
I think that's enough.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh, no. Let's do the ending. That way, this
the
is
ending.
The, okay. What's the thing that like made Johnny Carson cry?
Here? Okay,
we'll start.
Fine.
All right. Oh, how I wish that wasn't so.
I'll always love a dog named Bob.
And the dog's dead. Which I look, I feel for him.
Yeah,
we all love our dogs.
You know,
I don't think I could be moved to tears by that.
I have a sad story about my dog named Bob. I guess everyone who has a dog has a sad story.
Well, they always had sad, yeah. They're...
Yeah. Maybe, who should we do dueling next week? Dueling John Wayne's next week?
We could do that. We could do,
Wait, I can't really do a John Wayne.
Oh, me neither, actually.
No. I mean, I could do, like, the caricature voice, you know, like, well, Pilgrim. So, people know, we're trying to do a bad John Wayne.
Dueling Edward G. Robinson's.
Ooh. I don't have a good Edward G. Robinson.
Well, you gotta work on it.
I do.
You can do that. You can do Jim Neighbors. Do you do Jim Neighbors?
No.
No, I'm not talking about the ones that everybody years ago.
We could do more modern. We could do, like, dueling Shatners.
That's modern.
Walker,
sure.
That,
who is the impression that, like the new impressionists do?
Hmm.
And, like, you know what I mean? Like, everybody years ago did, you know.
Yeah.
They did Shatner.
Yeah, and everyone did Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah, now I'd say Walken is even long past hack.
Right.
Is there like a new person everybody does? Everybody's doing Trump now. Every comic is doing shitty Trump.
Yeah. I've heard at least three different people doing Owen Wilson, which is interesting. Because he has a very distinctive voice, but he's not a big movie star anymore. So that's that's harder to pull off. I haven't even seen Cars 3. I'm assuming he's in the third one because he's the star of the first and second one.
Yeah.
I don't think they cut him out. Yeah, who would they be doing? And let's tie it in. Who were they doing 100 years ago today? I think they'd be doing a lot of Eddie Cantor.
Eddie Cantor, yeah. Be a big one there.
Yeah, especially since he had he had recordings around him. So people knew who he was even if they had never seen him before.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy, Billy Murray, at the beginning of the episode, he sounds just like Eddie Cantor.
But a lot of Teddy Roosevelt, right?
Yeah, yeah. Roosevelt is harder to do, though, because... He had dentures, so...
Yeah.
So part of the impression is
I like imagine
gritting
your
teeth through the dentures.
No, they probably break out, they would turn around, and then they would turn back, and they'd have, the big fake teeth in.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, yes.
So you'd have to walk around with a little prop.
Yeah.
I wonder what other entertainers there would be, or would it not be entertainers at all? I bet it would be someone like Annie Semple McPherson, like an evangelist, would be, the most famous person in the day who are you doing impressions of. Or Will Rogers. Oh, Will Rogers. But no, he's not even around yet.
He's not around yet.
He's not around yet. Yeah, and this is even before radio takes off.
Mm-hmm. You would think 6 months of doing the show, we'd know who one 1917 celebrity is.
Yeah, one famous person.
No, there was no entertainment then. People just went to war.
It's like the days before television, where the cartoon where people just stared at a wall all night long. For lack of any better ending, that is the end of this week, 100 years ago today, the 1917 podcast. Join us next week when we go into the guns of August. Until then, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.